Should the production of laws be the domain of lawmakers? The answer might not be so obvious, but we'll find out nonetheless on this week's Radio Berkman. When it comes to the intersection between business and the law, there are those who believe that the best government is that which governs least. And there are those who believe rules and regulations are critical to making sure businesses behave properly. Somewhere in between, or perhaps above, are those who believe the responsibility for building the legal infrastructure for businesses in the new economy could work well in the hands of those who are, well, building the businesses of the new economy. Jillian Hadfield is the Richard L. and Antoinette S. Kirtland Professor of Law and Professor of Economics at the University of Southern California, and the director of the Southern California Innovation Project. We spoke to her about how legal infrastructures could be built to help promote more innovation in the new economy, and who could build them, while also protecting the public interest. You talk about something called the private production of legal systems. What exactly does that mean?
Well, it means that in the same way that most of the goods and services that we buy in a market economy are produced by private firms, you know, whether they're family-owned businesses or big publicly traded firms. And so what I'm talking about with the private production of law is the idea that those kinds of firms could also produce the legal rules and institutions that could support some of our economic activity. The idea that you don't need to go to the state necessarily to provide you with contract law, but perhaps to a private firm that provided you with contract law.
So where exactly does this idea come from? Like, what kind of roots does this idea have?
Well, actually, in many ways, the first development of legal rules for markets were really privately produced sets of rules. So back in the Middle Ages, you know, when the merchants who were traveling around the globe at the time needed to enforce their contracts to get paid or make sure that goods were of a promised level of quality, they were looking for sets of rules to govern that, and in many cases it was merchant associations that created those rules and joined forces with a ruler who had some military might, some coercive power to enforce, but that was probably less important than the fact that the rules were developed by the merchants themselves. And we still see this today in trade associations developing sets of rules. If you become a diamond trader, for example, you join an organization that provides you with the set of rules that will govern your contracts with other members of the association. So it's actually got long roots. The notion that the law is only produced by the state is something that evolved over time, and I guess I'm sort of looking at it from the point of view that we may be at the point where we need to reintegrate more private production into how we produce our rules and systems.
Part of that impetus to, you know, start looking to the private sector to help us create rules comes from what you kind of see as the new economy, the pressures of the new economy. And what are those kinds of pressures, and how will they, you know, how will they motivate us to create more private entity-based rules?
The new economy involves much higher levels of complexity in the way those relationships evolve, because they're global, they're changing all the time. And so the level of complexity, speed, and so on means that we're really pushing against the limits of what law produced basically by legislators, regulators, and judges, that law has a hard time keeping up. The notion here is that we really need institutions that are much closer to the ground and that face entrepreneurial incentives to meet those needs, playing a bigger role in providing that structure. You know, in the earlier days of the commercial internet, there were fundamental problems of how do we manage the trust relationships basically with transactions online. You can't see the business, you can't see the customer. How do I know you're keeping my information secure, and so on. And we saw a number of private providers try to come into that market with combinations of things like encryption tied to sets of rules for how you had to manage the encryption and the capacity to monitor that. So companies like VeriSign got into the business of providing really not only encryption, but encryption and a set of rules, and then into the business of monitoring that set of rules. The accountants also got into the business of providing a service that would set up, again, rules for how an online business would operate. And the accounting organization, this is through something called CPA Web Trust, would monitor the extent to which the firm complied with the rules that they had set out. So those are basically, I need some law here. I'm trying to sell online. I'm trying to convince my customers that I will treat their information with security and live up to my promises, just like those medieval traders needed to live up to their promises. So these firms were actually in the market for a set of legal rules that by implementing, they could provide assurance to their customers.
It sounds a lot like eBay in a way. You set up an ecosystem like eBay, and yes, you have a seller and a buyer, and if the buyer doesn't receive their product from the seller, they fall back on certain policies that eBay's created.
Right. eBay's created a set of rules, and you basically agree to be bound by that set of rules, and that allows that, exactly, the ecosystem is a good word for it, to work better. Another example is that this is a company that I'm on the board of advisors for, and they're creating a community of problem solvers, so companies that have business challenges they're looking to solve can post their challenges and sort of draw on a global community to help solve those. Well, that raises lots of real need for different kinds of legal structures. You know, who owns the ideas, who can use them, who can share in the value of those ideas. And one of the things that we've been exploring is how, in some ways, it has to become a legal provider of types. As I say, a provider of a set of rules that will produce a more valuable and effective set of relationships for open innovation. You know, establishing simpler rules, for example, than the background rules of partnership law and intellectual property law and trade secret and joint venture and so on.
Just looking down the road, would there be any threat of a privately created legal infrastructure supplanting a public legal structure? Immediately, it brings to mind to me like the idea of a mercenary kind of law, just the private entities coming up with the rules and regulations.
Well, one of the things it's important to think about with structuring private legal systems is one of the reasons that they can be valuable is because there's some competition between them. And that's a real problem for the state provider. It doesn't really have doesn't have competition. So when we're thinking about how to structure the markets for these legal providers, we would want to pay attention to the same kinds of things we pay attention to in ordinary markets, which is, you know, we don't want all of our steel produced and sold by a single entity. We don't want all of our operating systems produced and sold by a single entity. And so we have, on the one hand, we have pressures in lots of places, and, you know, thinking about operating systems is a good example of, you know, there's lots of pressures towards a single provider, but, you know, we need to have the structure in place that tries to protect against that when it's reducing welfare, you know, in the economy rather than increasing it. A private system is always ultimately dependent on a public system for enforcement, so it's always, in a sense, underneath the structure of a public. So we're not talking about eliminating public legal structures. It's just saying, look, our public legal structures should structure our private legal structures, legal markets, in the same way that our public legal structure now structures our markets for most goods and services.
So how does a private entity go about developing their own internal system of regulations?
Well, I think that's a question for the entrepreneurs and the market there, and this is why it's important to kind of harness that creativity and energy to say, how can we better solve the problems that firms in the new economy are facing? For example, would they have so many more contractual relationships that they can't really afford to spend all of the time and money that we usually do traditionally drafting lots of documents and getting lots of legal advice? How do we do that better? How can we do that at lower cost and still achieve our goals? So I see that as a question for entrepreneurs. I've just been actually this morning was reading a report about an Australian firm. Australia has significantly deregulated its markets for legal services like the UK has, and there is apparently an entity there that's emerged, which is owned by engineers, to provide legal documents, advice, and so on for engineers in their contracting relationships. And because it's owned by engineers, they can be focused on how do we solve our problem better instead of having to spend $10,000 on a contract for a $50,000 job or, you know, $5,000 to resolve a $5,000 dispute. What are the better ways we can do that? So I think in an environment where you can, for example, have engineers, you know, who know how to solve that problem, have better insight down at the ground level, say, hey, we could make money developing this as a product to sell to engineers.
And it sounds like in certain cases there could be a role for the consumer as well in developing the regulations. If you've got something like the Facebook terms of service battle that's going on right now,
yeah,
they're finding that bringing in the consumer to the rulemaking process can actually benefit their relationship with the consumer, as well as,
right,
you know, the outcome of the rulemaking process.
Right. So if you think about what is it that, you know, if you think about it as the legal rules are a product and they have value if they solve the kinds of problems we solve with law, like live up to your promises and bear the risk that you promised to take and so on, treat us fairly, that somebody who sees that's, I could sell, you know, a better product if I have something that consumers have more confidence in. So an entrepreneur who is trying to produce that product would be pretty smart to be figuring out what it is consumers will respond to. You know, if we think about the subprime mortgage problems we've just been experiencing, and there were significant levels of fraud and just mismatch in what people were agreeing to in a very, very complex set of contracts, we could imagine private providers having potentially been in that market with a service that said, send us your agreement, scan it and send it in and we'll review it. Or, you know, we know that there are 10 different versions out there and here's what you need to know about what's in them. Here are our recommended terms. Here's a set of steps you can take to ensure that you're getting the mortgage contract that you want. And that, you know, that can be a service that's produced and sold. It could be potentially produced and sold by a nonprofit. But those all fit in the category of expanding the role of private production of legal rules.
I'm curious what the reaction is from the kind of governmental rulemakers, what they think about the idea of private development of regulations. On one hand, they could be relieved that this matter is kind of taken out of their hands and they don't have to deal with it. On the other hand, they could,
right,
feel threatened.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. I think it does. It always strikes people as quite jarring, and they get images of the mafia and they get images of, this unfettered market capitalism, or, you know, letting people regulate themselves. And therefore, you know, that's certainly not a very, very popular idea these days after the financial collapse. The first step to realize is that a lot of what our law does is serve as an economic input. That is to say, it's an economic good or service, just like, hotel rooms and cars and operating systems and so on. It's serving an economic function. And our presumption in most cases is that properly regulated markets will do a better job of producing the amount and type and quality of goods and services that we need will do better than the state, right? That's the competition between a market economy and a centrally planned economy. And once you recognize that there are a lot of things that we do through law that are performing a similar type of function, then you're kind of switching the burden and saying, okay, so what we want to do is assume this would be better solved by the market, and then explain what parts of it or why we need to regulate it or provide it through the state. I mean, there are some goods we need to provide through the state. But I think once you recognize it's got this economic function and it's distinct from, like, the political functions of law, the democratic functions of law, you know, we're not saying, you know, let's have our civil rights law created by private profit-making competitive entities. That's a function of the state. We're not saying let's have our employment regulation produced in that way. But if we're talking about how do you get two corporations to agree to a deal or encourage consumers to enter into relationships with sellers, a lot of that is economic, and I think our starting point should be markets will probably do better at this. What's the rationale for not having it in the market, or how do we get those markets to operate the way we want to? I mean, ultimately, we want them to work in the public interest.
Yeah, and I mean, hopefully there will be a role for the stakeholders who don't necessarily have a direct economic benefit from this private rulemaking.
Right, and that's the way we handle, for example, environmental regulation. You know, we say the chemical company can't just decide for itself what it wants to dump in the rivers. We don't tell them how to manage the details of the products they decide to produce and what they sell until it hits the point at which we're saying we need to regulate this in order to align what the company wants to do with what we think is in the long-term interests of the public at large. You know, think about the debate about banks right now. There is some question of whether in these circumstances the state should just go in and own and operate the banks, but a lot of people are pretty nervous about whether or not the government, even short-term, can operate a bank very well. But that doesn't mean, therefore, we're not going to regulate banks.
I appreciate you talking to me about this, and I thank you for your time.
Thanks, Dan. It was great.
Jillian Hadfield is the Richard L. and Antoinette S. Kirtland Professor of Law and Professor of Economics at the University of Southern California and Director of the Southern California Innovation Project. You can find some links to some of her work on our website. This episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. You can find out about this episode and more programs like this at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. You can find out about this episode and more programs like this at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman.